ever had a stupid question?
Well, we're here to answer it. Welcome to This Is a Stupid Question, But I'm your host, Mahnoor.
And I'm Amy, and this is the podcast where we find all our smart answers to all our stupid science questions.
And today we're answering the question, why do we sleep? Which, like, we've only done 5 episodes, but I think this was the coolest thing I've researched in a while. This was really cool.
It also made me realise that I've not had a good night's sleep since before I started education, which means I was 4.5 since my last good sleep.
And now everything I do, I'm going to be like, it's because I didn't get my 8 hours of sleep. So it's going to be a lot of placebo as well, where as soon as it goes after noon, I'm going to be like, oh, yes, the dip in my circadian rhythm. It literally happened to me today after lunch. I was falling asleep and I was like, oh, my God, it's my circadian rhythm going down.
Yeah. You need a long lie. Exactly. I'm definitely going to have a long lie this week.
Hopefully.
For medical reasons, not for laziness.
Medical reasons. Exactly. It's prescribed. But yeah, so we're going to talk about sleep. We're going to talk about why we sleep. We're going to talk about the benefits and what happens if you don't sleep. So before we get into like why we sleep, I thought it'd be cool to talk about the circadian rhythm, which I found fascinating. Like in my 4 years of uni, I think this was the coolest set of lectures I had. Like, it was because the professor was kind of psychotic and he didn't really teach us. He just like talked at us in like this jumble of words. He was like a tax evader. He's not allowed in the US anymore. He almost set his lab on fire. Like, he was a character.
That went from 0 to 100.
Literally, he was one of those people that I didn't teach. He just came in and talked for 2 hours and left. So I didn't learn anything, but like, it was just fascinating to hear it, if that makes sense. But yeah, yeah. So that's the first time I came into contact with learning about the circadian rhythm. But basically, the circadian rhythm is your internal clock and it regulates your physiology. And generally, like 60% of your cell biology is on a rhythm. So it's cyclic. It doesn't have to be 24 hours, but like it is a routine thing that happens in terms of things going up or things going down. So obviously sleep is one of those things that is part of your circadian rhythm. And just as like the etymology of circadian. So circa means around and DM means day. It's derived from, so DN is derived from DM, which means day. And the reason it's called around a day, which is like approximately a day is what they're trying to say, is because our circadian rhythm is 24.5 hours, not 24 hours. So they're like, it's around a day. So it's a circadian rhythm. Which
so
I think
they
is
messed
really cool.
up with the, like, why did we not account for that? Why isn't a day 24.5 hours?
Oh, so we, our bodies are naturally 24.5 hours.
Wow.
So, but isn't it the fact that the Earth doesn't rotate exactly 24 hours as well in itself?
Oh, so we just like rounded it up to the new seven.
Our bodies throughout evolution were like 24.5 is fine. Like,
yep,
we're good. So every day naturally, you do want to wake up half an hour later if your body wants to stay on its cycle. But external cues obviously tell you, no, you got to wake up at this point, at this point. So yeah, so circadian rhythm controls a lot of things. It controls like your eating, your drinking, your core body temperature, when you pee, for example, as well. I found this fact really cool. So the likelihood of an Olympic record being broken can also be tied to a specific part of the day, which is early afternoon. So they've looked at different athletes and seen like they're more likely to break an Olympic record in early afternoon, which is when like your body's activity is at its peak in terms of all the circadian rhythm, which is
I get you. So afterwards it's just downward spiral.
Exactly. So like you're the fittest in the day around early afternoon. So you can tie an Olympic record being broken to that specific point in different athletes. Interesting.
You'd be gutted if the schedule meant that you were running at 8 o'clock in the afternoon.
And you're like, guys, I'm not going to win. My circadian rhythm's off.
Exactly.
But yeah, so all animals and plants have this. And obviously for us, it's, if we just focus on sleep now, it is tied to the light. So we're kind of solar powered, if you want to think about it that way, where the external light cues will tell us. So artificial lighting can influence like your basic health and physiology in terms of influencing whether it's day or night, but it's not strong enough to fully reset your internal clock. Whereas, for example, if you travel, you can reset your clock because the timing that the sun comes out has changed, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So in humans, they've done experiments where they've put humans literally in just the dark for a few days. And they've saw that our clock resets to 24 and a half hours. But there's some people who have specific disorders where that doesn't happen. And there's two interesting disorders for sleep, at least. And one is delayed sleep phase syndrome. And the other is acute sleep phase or advanced sleep phase syndrome. They kept these people, for 22 days in this dark room with no external cues of light whatsoever. People with delayed sleep phase syndrome only felt like they were there for 11 days, not 22 days. So they only lived through 11 days. So they're just living longer days. So their circadian rhythm, their internal clock, is actually 48 hours, not 24 hours. But in normal life, they're exposed to the sun. So like their alarm clock wakes them up at 7 a.m. or whatever. But they're always jet lagged in a way. They're never caught up on time because their clock's not in tune with what's happening. And when they put them in a dark room, they see that happen where this person kind of lives one day over 48 hours rather than 24 hours, which is weird and hard to come to terms with in a way.
Yeah, that's wild.
And exactly. And then people on the opposite end of the spectrum, if you put them in for 22 days, they feel like they've lived 44 days.
So they sleep less that they count double the amount of days.
Yes, they've lived double the days to a normal person. That's more rare compared to the delayed one, but it's still seen in some humans. And these people are always out of tune with what's happening in like day-to-day life, which is very interesting. So there's people who's like, and thing is, they'll never really know because they'll just be like, oh, I'm tired all the time, I didn't get enough sleep. But it's just because they actually have this either a compressed or a delayed cycle in their sleep, which is interesting. But yeah,
that's really cool. I've never heard of that.
I was fascinated. So this is all, basically, these are my lecture notes from uni. Yeah, so we have a 24 and a half hour sleep cycle. We are in tune with the sun. And the region in our brain that's kind of responsible for coordinating all of this, the clock inside our brain, is in a region within the hypothalamus. And it's called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And this thing is made up of 20,000 neurons. And considering you have 10 billion in your brain, it is a tiny amount of your brain. But it coordinates the clock your of life. Your body. Yeah, it generally coordinates every single thing in your body in terms of cycling, which is so cool.
So I guess if you have damage to that brain, that part of your brain, then you're very messed up.
Yes. So if you were to cut out that region of your brain, you'd become arrhythmic. You don't have a cycle anymore. And they find that this is connected to specific cells within your retina. It's not your rods and your cones. They're specific photosensitive retinal ganglion cells. And this is very interesting. So blind people, if it's just their rods and their cones that are damaged, they can still sync to the sun. But
even though they can't see it.
Even though they can't see it. So cool.
Yeah.
But if it is like, I don't know if it's the whole eye that is damaged within them, they become arrhythmic. What's interesting is if they can sense the sun, they get things like seasonal depression when the sun goes down, even though they can't see it.
That's so... Whoa.
I know. That's so cool.
They can sense it even though they can't see it.
They can still sync to the sun if depending on what like cells are affected in their eye, which I find very cool. And what's also interesting is our entire body is synced to that one clock in our brain. In different animals, that's not the case. So in zebrafish and Drosophila, so our cells in our body all have the circadian rhythm, but in our body, they take cues from the brain. In zebrafish and Drosophila, which are flies, each cell can sync itself to the sun separately because each cell is photosensitive. What? I know.
But that makes no sense.
You look so confused.
If you're a fly, or a zebrafish and you're so small, then your whole body is going to see the sun at the same time anyway.
Yeah, I guess they have such a small surface area to volume ratio that it works for them to be completely photosensitive to the sun. But I guess we have such a, it might be the surface area to volume ratio, that we just sink to a central region in our brain and our whole body listens to that. But yeah, there's animals whose entire body is just separately photoreceptive.
That stresses me out.
It's insane. Like, what?
My brain hurts. Would that be? Like, why would every cell need a separate control?
I don't know how that, the evolutionary benefit to it. I'm not sure why. I guess maybe that might be how organisms might have evolved originally, and as we got bigger, we might have centralized a system instead.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But yeah, that makes sense.
So that's our circadian rhythm. So it's this internal clock in our brain that regulates everything. So how does it regulate your sleep? So there's a gland in your brain known as the pineal gland that produces melatonin. And that is kind of, so the example that I read was, you know, the person who like starts off the race that waves the flag. Melatonin mm-hmm. is the person waving the flag. And then the rest okay. of your organs start the process of like, okay, we're going to get ready to sleep. Like our cycle is mm-hmm. going to change now for darkness. So melatonin is the signal that doesn't necessarily put you to sleep, but it tells your body, get ready to sleep now. Like it's happening. Darkness is here. Get yourself ready. Sometimes known as the vampire hormone or the hormone of darkness. Because
I
soon
love
after
it. That's
dusk,
so emo, isn't it?
I know, it's very emo, isn't it? The hormone of darkness. Yeah, it's like soon after dusk, like as the sun starts setting, your levels of melatonin start going up and they start telling your brain and like the organs in your body, like, dude, like it's time, like mm-hmm. it's time to sleep soon. And when you go to sleep, the levels will then slowly start falling until sunrise and the sun starts coming out. And by then the pineal gland will stop producing melatonin and then you're awake. And then the cycle will repeat itself throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
So melatonin is like their regulator. So in America, I think you can get melatonin off the counter just as like a sleeping drug.
So it's a sleeping tablet.
Yes, you can get as okay. a drug for people. So people with insomnia, for example,
mm-hmm.
It can be prescribed. I think here it's on a prescription, but in America, you can just get it over the counter as like a sleeping
Seems
pill.
Seems very safe.
Yeah. But from what I read, melatonin on its own is kind of useless to put you to sleep. It's like your body needs to respond to it as well. And everything mm-hmm. else in your body needs to happen in response to melatonin as well. So it's not the cure-all to putting you to sleep ASAP. Anyways.
Cool. It's just a signal to say it's time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But yes, so that's kind of leads us into why do we sleep. And if we're looking at biologically, the reason we sleep is because the melatonin in our body increases and we mm-hmm. go to sleep. And another thing that happens is the rise in adenosine in our body. And adenosine is what makes you sleepy. So as it rises, you know when you're like tired and you can just feel the sleep over you, it's the adenosine mm-hmm. just like all in your body. And they're two separate systems. So your circadian rhythm and your melatonin are one system, and adenosine is a completely separate system. They don't regulate each other, but they mm-hmm. kind of work next to each other. So there's two separate things putting you to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
And adenosine is what caffeine blocks and wakes you up.
Ah, yeah.
So okay. caffeine binds the receptors that block adenosine, and it gives you this wakefulness, alertness. But it's also the reason why you crash, because think of it as like your body's been building adenosine over time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like the floodgates open as soon as the caffeine goes away, because mm-hmm. you have the adenosine that you had when you had the coffee and what you've been building up since you've had the coffee. And then it hits you in one go and you crash.
So is this kind of why as well, like obviously melatonin is still signaling when you're mm-hmm. having caffeine. So can you feel alert but fall asleep?
Yes. So they did this study in people who they basically kept awake for a day or so, and their adenosine was rising all throughout the night, and so was their melatonin. But when they went to sleep, their melatonin was a separate cycle, right? So it went down. And remember, our circadian rhythm is at its peak at noon. So mm-hmm. when you're sleep deprived, you know, when you like hit a wall and you get this burst of energy, That's because of the melatonin. So yeah, you can be completely, can be dead tired and sleepy because of the adenosine, but your circadian rhythm could be at its peak because of like the lack of melatonin. So you can be both alert and sleep deprived.
Yeah, okay.
At the same time.
I understand that because I feel like I've failed it.
Yeah, and I know that while I was reading it, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense. Like, you know when you have an early flight and you get up and there's just this burst of energy, but as soon as you get to your destination, all of it just hits you in one wave.
Exactly.
I'm going to blame that on, like, yeah, like, I know what's happening in my body now. Basically, that's why we sleep. So we sleep because there's signals in our body telling us to do so. Mm-hmm. But why do we need sleep? What is the reason why we've evolved sleep? And what was interesting is we didn't know much about sleep until like recently, in air quotation marks, compared to like a lot of things we've been interested in for a long time. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at it from an evolutionary point of view, sleep isn't that helpful. And if you just look at it from the sense of like, you can't defend yourself, you can't eat, mm-hmm. you can't do anything. You're basically in like a small coma for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So either it's a mistake throughout evolution, and it's one of the biggest mistakes evolution could have probably made in terms of causing you to sleep, or it's one of the most important things to have, that it's so important that it overtakes the need for food or anything else that you could possibly, even like defending yourself against predators. And that's basically what it is. Sleep is mm-hmm. not one benefit. It's more like, what does it not benefit in your body?
Yeah,
is another
no.
way to look at it.
And in the book that we've based most of our research yes. on, the author is like, sleep is the foundation of life.
It is. You know? Sleep is the best thing you can do for yourself. And mm-hmm. I guess just as to mention it, called Why We Sleep, The New Science of Sleep and Dreams by Matthew Walker. And I highly recommend. It's like, I'm gonna go read it properly after this because it's such a good book. It's mm-hmm. it teaches you so much, but it's very lighthearted and very easy to follow, and it's really cool facts that I didn't know about at all. But yeah, so fetuses sleep. So when a baby kicks in a mom's stomach, it's actually just like it's sleeping. And
oh, like a little dream.
Yeah, exactly. As adult humans, our brains have like connected this part to when we dream, we have almost like relaxation of our muscles and we can't mm-hmm. use our muscles. So it kind of like freezes us. Whereas like babies don't have, well, fetuses don't have that connection yet in their brain. So they kick when they're dreaming. So when a baby is kicking, it's dreaming almost. Mm-hmm. And then when it's born, obviously children, when they're first born, sleep for basically all the time, because they don't mm-hmm. have a circadian rhythm at all yet, if anything. And then when they start hitting like 3 or 4 months, they slowly have a circadian rhythm. And by the time they're a year old, pretty much that's the thing leading their day. So mm-hmm. they will start sleeping throughout the night, having less naps, but will be having a decent amount of naps compared to an adult. And by year 4, like they're on track, they're on the circadian rhythm.
Do you think that obviously now that we live in a society focused on 9-to-5 jobs mm-hmm. and we've kind of forced our own awake and sleep times, do you think we should all be living like babies and napping all the time?
Yes. So interesting you say that. So naturally, humans have a biphasic sleeping pattern. So what would the 9-to-5...
Yes, I knew it. I'm so up for this. I nap all the time. And I think this is where we should be living life.
Napping is the future, people. So currently we're on a monophasic pattern, and like as a society, where we take one long burst of sleep and it's barely 7 hours on average, and especially in like big cities. And that's not how humans were meant to be. So they've looked at tribes that have been quite isolated, such as the Gabra in northern Kenya or the San people in the Kalahari Desert. They found that they have a biphasic pattern, which means they'll have 7 to 8 hours at night, but also they'll have a 30 to 60 minute nap in the afternoon. And you know what that reminds me of? Siestas.
Siestas. Yeah.
Yes. So a lot of Mediterranean countries and we'll have things like a siesta. Things will shut down basically during the noon, early mid-afternoon, where people will take a nap and things will open again. And the benefits of this, okay, so in Greece, they used to have siestas. I'm so excited to tell you this.
It's just going to make me, like, have to change my whole schedule. Be like, sorry, I can't work at this time. Imagine, this is my
imagine we go to the lab and, like, at 12, we're like, okay, see you in an hour. I'm off to bed.
Oh, I'm going to bring my sleeping bag with me.
Exactly. So in Greece, they used to have, like, the siestas and the stores used to be closed. And I think around the 2000s, there was this pressure kind of almost from, like, the tourist industry increasing mm-hmm. there to stop the siesta. And what they found, so basically they looked at a group of individuals that had no history of coronary heart disease or stroke at the start of the study, but when they started abandoning regular siestas, they saw a 37% increased risk of death from heart disease across a 6-year period. And this was 60% in working men. Basically, by not napping, their mortality, their death rate had increased by 60%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Siesta, yes. People.
Siesta.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty good evidence that the biphasic sleeping pattern is very important. But yeah. We've shifted completely out of that. And I think the book kept stressing that the way we sleep now is not how we're engineered to be. We might evolve to and adapt to this over time, as with many things in life, but it's not what our bodies want.
I wonder how often that author sleeps.
Oh, yeah. Well, he said, I think when I was reading through, he was like, I get at least 8 hours of sleep at night. And I was like, you go, dude. I wonder if he, like, takes naps as well. We've talked about the circadian rhythm. We've talked about why we sleep, but what happens when we sleep. And the answer is, like, we don't exactly know, but we know more than we did a few years ago.
I feel like that's the answer to everything in life.
That's such a vague answer, mm-hmm. but that's what it is. So generally, there's 4 stages of sleep, and they can be divided into NREM stage 1, 2, and 3, and then REM sleep. And I feel like a lot of people are familiar with those terms, but not exactly know what they do.
So REM meaning rapid eye movement?
Yeah, so REM is rapid eye movement, and NREM is non-rapid eye movement. Basically, these people are really lazy when they label these 4 stages, is mm-hmm. what I'm going to say. So what happens is NREM is stage 1, and that's when, you know, when you're falling asleep. And it lasts around 5 to 10 minutes. And I guess you kind of experience that, you know, when you're about to fall asleep and someone wakes you up, you're basically mm-hmm. in NREM stage 1. Mm-hmm. And then you hit stage 2, and basically your body temperature will drop, your heart rate slows down, your brain will start to produce sleep spindles, which are the signals that go through your brain, and they're involved in different things, which you'll cover more as we go mm-hmm. along. And this was about 20 minutes, so it's been half an hour since you've fallen asleep, basically. So NREM stage 1 was 5 to 10, now it's been 20 minutes, and then you're in stage 3 of NREM. And your muscles have relaxed, your blood pressure drops, your breathing rate drops, and this is like deep sleep. This is mm-hmm. the deepest stage of sleep you'll be in. And then you can hit REM sleep. And REM sleep is when your brain kind of becomes very active. It's when the signals start firing really, really fast. Your body becomes relaxed, but also you're like a stone. You ain't moving at all. And this is when you dream. And it's called REM, rapid eye movement, which you can guess is your eyes are moving rapidly, mm-hmm. which I find horrifying. Yeah. The thought of like opening someone's eyelids and their eyes just like moving rapidly. Oh. but that's when you're dreaming, and you're constantly cycling through REM and NREM as you sleep. So you're going through dreams and not dreaming. So you're constantly cycling through these 4 stages.
I thought that was like, what do you call it? Linear.
Oh, no. So your body's constantly cycling between mm-hmm. these 2 different things. And I'm not sure we know the exact reasons. We don't know when you're going to hit this, when you're going to hit that, why you're cycling, what way you're cycling. But we now have a good sense of, like, at least there's these 4 stages, and mm-hmm. we know a vague idea of what's happening in each stage. That's what's basically happening when you sleep. And all of these stages are kind of necessary for you to reap the benefits of sleep. And the book kept stressing that, like, you need to sleep properly, you need to give your body time to kind of empty the trash from the day, like get rid of whatever stuff you don't need and put the stuff that you need in the storage, like basically clean up the house before you wake up again. people like in their 20s should be getting 7-ish hours of sleep, 7 to 8. Teenagers are supposed to be getting 9 hours of sleep a day, which mm-hmm. like starting school at 8 in the morning, not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So you should be getting the recommended amount of sleep, but like it's easier said than done, considering, like you said, we live in this 9-to-5 society.
So yeah, it's not possible in this society. But you know what I think wild about it is, I'm going to get into this and all the risks of different diseases associated with lack of sleep. But we go on and on and on about, oh, this causes this and this causes that. Mm-hmm. And we make people like eat healthy and exercise and avoid smoking. But we're not like focusing on rest.
Which is free and very easy to do.
Yeah. And like,
And it's such an enjoyable thing to do. Like, it's the easiest thing you can do to mm-hmm. literally like lose weight. And you'll go into that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it affects everything in your life.
Uh-huh. But we don't really focus on that as like a society.
No.
Like, yeah, it's like, you know, if you see someone smoking, you go, oh, they're smoking, and you judge them. But then if you go into work and someone goes, oh my God, I'm surviving on 5 hours of sleep today, you're like, oh, well done you. It should be, go home and sleep, because you're going to increase your risk of cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, etc., etc., etc. Also, don't smoke, but...
Yeah, don't smoke as well. But, like, you know how in uni it's, like, such a big thing that people stay up all night studying?
Yeah, you boast about it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but when you look at the science, that's actually the worst thing you can do for actually learning.
Like, as a teenager, I would, like, try and pull all-nighters to watch loads of movies in the one night, and as if it was, like, an achievement. Yeah. I think it's imagine like chain smoking a whole pack of cigarettes would be the same kind of achievement.
But yeah, so I think this is when I hand it off to you and you can talk about the benefit. Yep. So we're sleeping, Amy. What's happening to us?
So I think it's actually easier to see the benefits of sleep by looking at people who don't sleep enough. But there's one benefit that we can see from measuring people who just sleep. And what you've already said is important, that we get the right amount of sleep. We should be getting around 8 hours of sleep a day, but it's also really important we're getting the right kind of sleep. So you need all of the cycles. You can't just have one, because each of the cycles have different benefits for different things. So one of the main benefits then is to do your memories. So every day, everything we do and see is saving as a short-term memory in our brain in an area known as the hippocampus. But imagine it like a memory stick. It's not got space for every single thing that we do in our like 80 years of life. It needs to be stored somewhere as a long-term memory. And this happens in the cortex. So your hippocampus needs to be cleared out every day to get rid of these short-term memories and store somewhere else, and then the next day can make fresh memories to be stored again as long-term ones. What's really interesting is this benefit of sleep is one of the earliest recorded benefits of sleep ever. So there was this prophetic Roman rhetorician, which was someone who had ideas that could persuade or impress people. He was called Quintilian, nice. And he lived after death 35 to 100. And he said, "It is a curious fact, of which the reason is not obvious, that the interval of a single night will greatly increase the strength of the memory."
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was really cool. That's so long ago that he noticed this. Yeah. So it's now believed that during our deep, non-rapid eye movement sleep, we can store our short-term memories into our long-term ones. Okay. So what they did, and there's been studies doing this, loads of studies doing this, but some of the studies, what they'll do is they'll give people a list of things to remember,
mm-hmm.
and they can read as much as they want, and then they can either go to sleep or not go to sleep, and go to sleep for a various amount of hours, and then in the next morning try to recall the memories. And what they've seen is that people who had the 8 hours of sleep had a significantly higher ability to recall the list of items that they were told to memorize, compared to the ones who didn't have enough sleep or the right amount of sleep or no sleep at all. So what is actually happening then to store these memories is that, you know, those spindles you talk about, so mm-hmm. the electrical currents going between your brain, they can see them when they do MRI scans of people sleeping, that these spindles are moving from the hippocampus to the cortex, almost transferring memories.
That's so cool how, like, you can see your memories moving in
a way. That's what the author said. He was like, this is such like a personal thing we're looking at. We can see memories moving from here to here. And what's really cool is that your brain almost decides what memories to keep and what memories to store. So like we said, the whole brain is, well, other than just the hippocampus, the whole brain is like a memory stick. It's not got the space to keep everything. So if you recognize something as important in your life, your brain will know this and decide to store it in the long term. And if it's not important, it will get rid of it.
So smart.
Exactly. But if you're not getting your sleep, then you have this less able ability to store these long-term memories, but also making this decision between important and non-important.
That's so cool. It's kind of like, you know, when you take your USB out too quickly before everything has transferred. That's basically what's
exactly
happening.
Exactly. Basically, think of everything that goes wrong with your computer. That's what's happening when you're and you're not sleeping properly.
So how does your brain know what's important? Like, do you tell it?
In a way, it's almost like the signals you give it, like if you can, if you keep thinking about it, or in some of the studies, what they do is they'll show pictures of things to remember. And if, say, it's like cat, dog, fish, things like this, but if they play a signal, like a song, at the same time as the cat pops up, then you're more likely to remember that the next day compared to the fish with no noise. So it's just like how significant that thing is.
Yeah, it's kind of like relating it to other senses.
Yes, I guess so. How memorable it is, basically. So that's storing of your memories. But then, like I said, the hippocampus needs to be cleared out so you can make more short-term memories. And you know that feeling when you're like studying for an exam and you're waking up early in the morning, crashing, writing all your notes, and then not sleeping, and it's a cycle right before your exams?
No, I never did that because it never worked.
Okay, yeah, well, it doesn't work. And they know this because when you do these studies where you don't let people sleep, they have a significantly lower ability to store new memories.
Because there's no space.
Yeah, so not only is your sleep letting you store your memories, but also it's letting you refresh your brain to make new memories.
That's so cool.
Yeah, exactly. So what they've seen is that these spindles, which are moving between your hippocampus and refreshing your hippocampus for new memories and storing the long-term ones, are especially rich in the early hours of the morning, so the last few hours of your sleep. So if you're missing these last few hours of your sleep and you're just getting like 6 hours of sleep, you're less refreshed for your next day of learning.
Oh my God, how annoying is it? It's the last 2 hours that count the most.
Exactly. And like you said about schools starting so early in the morning, and more than likely kids aren't going to sleep 8 hours before they're meant to wake up.
Exactly.
They're not really able to make these memories in the morning, you know? So the school structure should change.
Exactly. And they're just going to school and being bombarded with more information they have to learn. And there's no space.
Exactly. There's no space. The memory stick has run out.
Exactly.
So what I find really cool, though, is that if you ever like woken up in the morning and just suddenly like a thought has dawned on you?
Yes. Yeah. I had that the other day where I forgot what Tantrum Donuts is called, and I was like half asleep and I was like, there's this donut place in Glasgow and I can't remember. And I woke up and I was like, oh my God, Tantrum Donuts.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, law of attraction, I had the Tantrum Donuts this afternoon.
Did you?
Yeah, exactly. So I have these things all the time. Like I'll wake up suddenly in the morning and be like, oh, I never like turned that switch off in the lab, or I forgot to add this reagent. It's just on
the lab things. Oh
yeah. And you kind of just, I don't know why, I don't know where I thought it came from, but I often just wake up these memories. And what this is, it's when you can recall memories that have appeared to be lost. So what the author explains it is like, how he explained it is like when you have a file on your memory stick which is corrupt, but then you give it time to clean out and the virus to be gone, and you can then access this file. It's like that. You can now access a memory that's been lost. That's... And it's basically like it's been stored somewhere you've not even realized because it's not been significant, like these important memories, but then it pops up.
Is it kind of, I guess it's not the same, but it's kind of like when you know how people have repressed memories from trauma? Is it kind of the same where like it's there, but it's not there and your brain can take it out?
Bring it out. Yeah, to be honest, I didn't look into that, so I'm not sure, but I'd imagine it would be. And like, I guess there's a part of your brain that can store memories that you don't even know. And I guess then sometimes you maybe hear a song or a smell and it brings
and it
back
comes
that memory.
Back up.
Yeah. So the storage is deep and it's, what do you call it when you store something? You compress it into a little...
Oh, it's like compressed into a zip file.
Yeah, you open it later.
And you have to extract it from time to time.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So we are computers, really cool. Amy, is basically what we're realizing.
Uh-huh. So you're thinking then, that's great that you need loads of sleep to make new memories, but I've not got the time. Is there a way to improve my memory? So yes, scientists have done this, and this is one of those things you shouldn't try at home, but they induce artificial brainwaves in the same rhythm as the brainwaves that would happen at these different cycles of sleep. And it's just basically, I don't understand the science of it, but it's using electrodes stuck to the surface of the skin and inducing these brainwaves. And they see that this increase in memory the next day after they've induced these artificial ones. But there's other ways they can do it. So inducing audio tones, like in TikTok, and the same wave pattern as the brain waves. And again, they can see some improvement in memory. But my personal favourite was this study where they got a bed attached to a rope and literally rocked people to sleep.
I swear there's an easier way than hanging a bed from a ceiling.
Yeah, you could just, I don't know, put them in a cot. Yeah. But anyway, that's what they did. And when they looked at the brainwaves again, they seen that these spindles were almost double the amount compared to people that were in static beds. So in this study, they didn't analyse the people's memory capacity, but the spindles obviously being involved in memory would suggest that these people have better memory when they wake up in the morning. And it offers a scientific reason for why babies are rocked to sleep in a cot or in their parents' arms. So basically, what you need to get all your sleep, the right amount of sleep, and be rocked to sleep.
So why should I try that at home then?
Well, you can try that one at home, just not the brainwave.
Best not to electrocute yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, I think people can buy these things online, honestly, and there's been cases of people having burns and impairment in their sight.
Wow.
Yeah, so don't try it at home.
Yep.
And what's cool about these improvements in memory is not just humans. They've done studies where they give like chimpanzees food in the same place every day, and the chimpanzees that have the proper amount of sleep can remember that better. And they've also seen it in cats, rats, and insects.
So cool.
Mm-hmm. So sleep to remember. So the other one that you can see from measuring amount of sleep is improvements in human performance.
Mm-hmm.
So when they look at professional and elite athletes, they found that anything less than 8 hours can really reduce the amount of time before they reach physical exhaustion by around 10-30%. So I guess it's almost like what you said about you're more likely to win your Olympic medal at noon and day, but also you're probably more likely to win if you've had the right amount of sleep.
Yes.
And it's almost like an accepted medical an accepted sports enhancement drug.
It is. It's free, completely legal. Just sleep. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't sleep. It that they like even prescribe sleep to some athletes because it's that I'd important imagine. To their health? Mm-hmm.
Then you will. Basically, it's not just about like exhaustion. Well, you can see these physiological changes when you don't have the right amount of sleep. So you can see reduced aerobic output, reduced muscle strength, reduced cardiovascular function, reduced metabolic function, and respiratory capabilities. And a 2014 study of young athletes, chronic lack of sleep correlated with predicted higher risk of sporting injuries.
Which is like the biggest fear that any athlete would have.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I'd imagine that would keep them up at night.
Yes.
What do you mean? But then, like I said, a lot of the benefits we see of sleep come from analysing people who have sleep deprivation. And luckily, that's most of the industrial world.
Just take anyone and study them.
Uh-huh. What he said in his book was that there are many ways that lack of sufficient sleep will kill you. Some take time, others are more immediate.
So I like that.
If you've had a night where you've not slept well, what is like the main things you notice about yourself?
Oh my god, I eat like there's no tomorrow, and mm-hmm. I'll eat anything. Crave sugar because mm-hmm. I need something to keep me awake, and I'm angry at everything.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Anything else? My brain hurts.
Your brain.
I have a headache.
Okay.
For the whole day.
I'm going to assume that by brain hurts you mean concentration.
Oh yeah, I can't. Literally, if you say anything, I will. You can see the blank look on my face while you're definitely. Talking to me.
But all of your symptoms are registered symptoms of lack of sleep.
Yeah, when I read them, and I was like, oh, That makes so much sense.
And many more things. So I thought I'd just go through them briefly because they all just have their own, like, in-depth discussion, but we've not got the time. So the first one was then concentration.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that every hour in the US, someone dies because of a traffic accident associated with fatigue?
Because they fell asleep.
So either you completely fall asleep at the wheel, mm-hmm. which is quite rare, or you have these things called microsleeps, and you've probably experienced them. Everyone's experienced them. And it's pretty much a brief moment where you're blind to all perception.
Yeah, I get that.
You know what I mean? So, like, you're just kind of glazed. You're not really completely glazed over. It's seconds, and I guess that's all it takes to cause an accident if you're driving. What I thought was really wild was that if you accumulate all the traffic accidents associated with drunk driving and drug-related driving combined, the drowsiness or the fatigue-related traffic accidents exceeds that.
Why does no one talk about that?
I think it's like back to the whole thing that we're in.
Oh, wow.
Sleep 95 society.
Yeah, sleep is not something you consider as an issue in society.
Yeah. Well, this author was so clear about it. He went on for like 3 pages basically being like, if you're tired, sleep is so dangerous. And like the risk of being tired is hundreds of percentages.
Wow.
Increases your risk of traffic accidents. So what they did then, instead of like putting people in cars to test that the microsleep, they basically did these reaction tests where you would see like a light and you'd have to press a button every time you seen it. And they had different groups of studies in the sleep lab. So you either had like 8 hours sleep every night for 11 days, or you had 4 or 6 hours every night for 11 days, or you went 3 days with no sleep at all. Right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
After 72 hours of no sleep, these people had a 400% increase in microsleeps compared to the people that had the 8 hours of sleep. Yep.
Yeah. Insane. They would have died on the road.
Mm-hmm. And what I thought was really scary was the people that were on the 4 to 6 hours sleep every night, after 11 days, this got to the equivalent of not having slept at all for 24 hours. And what's scary about it is, it's not like you reach a peak of exhaustion and then it levels out and you're this level of exhausted all the time. It just keeps getting worse and worse.
And you just get more and more dead. I can't imagine mm-hmm. just, like, if I don't get 8 hours of sleep, exhaustion is insane. 24 hours? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
I know. And what is scary as well is that these people had no perception about how exhausted they were. Like, you're not, as humans, we're not able to tell. Because we just work on 6 hours of sleep, and people are always like, yeah, I can live on 5 hours of sleep, and yeah, you can live, but you're not functioning at your like full capability. You're almost,
kind of almost high by the time you're on 24 hours of no sleep.
Uh-huh. And I'll get to why that is. So we know now that after 16 hours of being awake, that is when you hit deprivation, and then it just gets worse from there. So have you ever heard of the term power nap?
Yes, but it doesn't work for me because I'll just sleep. But like, you just people sleep. Take like a 30-minute nap, don't they, max?
So I take 17-minute disco naps before a night out. If I worked all day and I've got a night out, I'll have a disco nap. But the correct term is power nap. But what's really cool is the term power nap came from these studies where they got pilots on long-haul flights. Obviously, they're staying awake much longer than they should be, and they're having to safely fly people from A to B. By the time they reach their peak of exhaustion on this flight is at the time where they're meant to be landing the flight, obviously, because it's the end of the flight. And that is also the most dangerous time of being in a flight, because this is when the pilot needs to take control and land the plane. So they did these studies where they got the pilots to nap at different times of the flight. And I guess that makes sense because you've not got one pilot. I think you've got two. So they can nap at different times. And what they've seen is that the pilots who napped at the early hours of the flight before they reach the point of deprivation, they had less microsleeps compared to the ones that napped later on. So it's not like replacing sleep. It's almost just giving you a little boost. The way caffeine gives you a boost, right? So you can't live your life on naps, but having a nap before you reach deprivation can push off these microsleeps and make the pilots safely fly.
Which is great when you have hundreds of people's lives in your hands.
Yeah, so I said that, like, despite what people say, no one can function at their peak with less than 8 hours sleep a day, except from a very small amount of people. And it's these people which have a genetic mutation. It's the gene BHLH41, which I've never heard of. Yep. And having this is rarer than being struck by lightning. So you're not one of them, basically. It's very
rare. Everyone listening who's like, I can survive on 6 hours sleep.
Yeah, you can't. People with these mutations, they apparently can. They can sleep with like 6 hours of sleep. They just wake up with no alarm after 6 hours and they don't really have any impairment. And scientists are obviously now looking into what this mutation does and how they can survive like this because
right? They have more hours in the day.
So that's like concentration and alertness. You said about feeling really active in the world. Yeah. And kind of erratic. So this is your emotions.
Also, I'll cry very easily. Basically, it's all over the place. I'm a mess.
And, this is because another region of your brain, the amygdala, this can control emotions. They see when you have sleep deprivation that you have a 60% amplification in this area of the brain, right? So yeah, you're over emotional, but at the same time, you've got different parts of your brain which control rational thinking, right? And this is your prefrontal cortex that controls this. When you have sleep, this should be in a balance then, so you're feeling emotions, but you're thinking, let's think rational about this emotional. When you're tired, you have a huge amplification in the amygdala. So these are really complex issues, but because of this, lack of sleep has been associated with things like depression, aggression, behavior disorders, also addiction and risk taking, because it's not just the bad things you're feeling. When you feel something good, you're feeling it without rational thought as well. So
it's a high, like, no matter what emotion it is.
And I think that's why you get that kind of delirious. So you're feeling the good things really good and the bad things really bad. And that leads to you not being able to think rationally about them.
Sleep is important.
And then the last thing I want to talk about then is the disorders that are associated with sleep that we all know about, but maybe not know they're associated with sleep. So it's been shown in a number of studies, and the NHS also say that the shorter the amount of sleep you get, the shorter your life expectancy is. There's many things it's associated with. So you've heard of Alzheimer's disease, obviously, and this has issues with memory storage and making memories, basically. So 60% of patients with Alzheimer's also have sleeping disorders, so maybe like insomnia and stuff. So they don't know, basically, if lack of sleep can be a cause or can be caused by Alzheimer's. And I think with all these kind of disorders, it's not one cause, it's environmental and genetic, so just bearing that in mind. But what they think is when you get Alzheimer's disease, you get this buildup of amyloid plaques in certain parts of the brain. And they think potentially this can block the signals between the different regions of the brain and therefore block memory storage and memory function.
What?
Yep. On the other hand, if you don't sleep, you're missing out on this very important cleansing part of the brain. So you've got different systems in the brain which drain tissues. And one of the systems in the brain is the lymphatic system. And it basically drains dangerous metabolites that your brain has built up from neuronal usage throughout the day. And it happens during this deep REM. And it's basically cerebral spinal fluids bathing the brain and then clearing it. And it takes away these dangerous...
That's like washing your brain.
Yeah, so it's a wash. What do you think is one of these dangerous things that then can't be cleared if you don't have your sleep? So therefore, lack of sleep builds up an amyloid plaque.
So it's not washing your brain. Don't know if it's...
We don't know if it's a cause or it is caused by lack of sleep, but it's a vicious circle, right? Because if you've got Alzheimer's disease, which is making you not sleep, you're getting less cleavage of the
building
plaques
up
and it's
more...
just more and more plaques.
I've never heard Alzheimer's in the context of sleep.
Yeah, very cool. So the next one then, and these are all really brief, is cardiovascular disease. And they think this is because when you don't have much, you lack sleep, you have increased blood pressure, which can lead to cardiovascular disease. And adults which are 45 years and above and have less than 6 hours sleep a night, they have a 200% increase to have an
What? Yes.
Others are things like diabetes and obesity. So you said you want to eat all the time when you're tired. they do studies where they ask people, what are you craving now you're sleep deprived? Cake. And whatever they want. Yeah. It's always, well, it's not always, it's more likely high calorie foods, which are desirable when you're sleep deprived.
And isn't that because, like, there's the two hormones in your body. One tells you that you're full, and one is like your hunger signal. And when you're sleep deprived, mm-hmm. the one that tells you that you're full, which is leptin, is at its bottom. And the one that tells you you're hungry and increases your appetite is at its peak. And that's why you basically eat like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess because when you're sleeping, you don't want to be woken up with like a grumbling tummy. You don't exactly. want to be woken up if you're hungry. Oh, yeah.
That's mm-hmm. And the type 2 diabetes, what? Basically, they sleep deprived people. I think they slept less than 6 hours a night for like a week or something. And then mm-hmm. they looked at their insulin levels, and with the guy in the book basically was like, if you took him to just some random doctor and didn't tell them what the study was, they would have diagnosed them as pre-diabetic.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's all to do with, you know, you've heard of the parasympathetic yes. and the sympathetic nervous system, and your sympathetic one is this fight mm-hmm. or flight.
Your cortisol response, yep.
basically. Uh-huh. So if you're not getting the amount of sleep, you've got an increased sympathetic nervous system stimulation. And these include things like increased, you want more energy, so you've got more glucose. So with a sympathetic nervous system, you've got increased cortisol. And cortisol tells your body not to respond to insulin because it stores the glucose, and you need to use the glucose because you want energy because of the stress. So that's why you've probably got more insulin in your blood. It's not being used. Other things that are changed because of this increased sympathetic nervous system are things like you've decreased digestion because your body's not focusing on absorbing the nutrients from your food, it's focusing on dealing with the fight or flight stress.
So you're basically just stressed. Yeah.
And then obviously my favorite, you don't just want an immune response, you want the right immune response. And when you're sleep deprived, you have a dysregulated immune response, and basically it means you have low grade chronic inflammation, it's not good, and it's associated with lots of autoimmune diseases, and it's also not very specific. But on the other hand, you have dysregulated and downregulated specific immune responses, which are used to clear infections and clear cancer cells and basically work normally and not give you these autoimmune diseases and clear infections, etc. So what that then means is that you have this low-grade chronic inflammation associated with things like atherosclerosis and cardiovascular disease, but you also have increased risk of infections because your body can't clear it, and also increased risk of cancer because your body can't clear it.
There's cancer. There's always cancer.
And, you know, I took this with a pinch of salt because I feel like everything's associated with cancer, but the World Health Organization has classified nighttime shift work as a probable carcinogen.
Excuse me? What? What?
And then my last one I wanted to talk about is reproduction. When you have lack of sleep, you have in one study they've seen a 29% reduced sperm count and also sperm deformities in people with sperm. They also seen a 20% drop in follicular releasing hormone, which we know from my last few episodes is essential mm-hmm. for the reproductive cycle and menstruation. This also led to a 33% higher rate of abnormal menstrual cycles in nurses who are doing shift work, and 80% more likely to have issues of subfertility and reduced ability to get pregnant. And then also associated with reproduction, attractiveness. So what they did in this, which I love, is they got people to come in, and they were to dress exactly the same. They had their hair exactly the same. The lighting in the room is exactly the same. And they took pictures of them in different days. But the only thing that changed was the amount of hours of sleep they were given. So 8 hours or 5 hours. They shuffled all the pictures and they gave them to people. And they had to rank them on things like tiredness and attractiveness. And the people the photos in which you had deprived level of sleep, you had a significantly less score of attractiveness compared to the right amount of sleep. There was also things about sleep and genetic mutations, but I think it was too much to get into for now, but again, associated with all these kind mm-hmm. of conditions. These are like the very basic ones, which all of the population are now at risk of because of the way we live. I'm not going to get into the extremes, but it'll take too long, and maybe we could talk about them in another episode. But there are extremes where things like insomnia, where people just really can't sleep. And I think 1 in 9 people have this.
Wasn't there that like will kill you because you can't sleep?
Mm-hmm. It's fatal, familial insomnia.
Like, there's no, like, even drugs won't get you to sleep.
Yeah, you'll just die. On that note, because most of us do actually get to sleep, I just wondered, how long can we go without sleep? And obviously, they can't really do studies on these on that because you'll just kill people. There was this boy called Randy Gardner, and he was a 17-year-old school student in San Diego, California. And he decided for his science fair project in 1964 that he would just not sleep. He got to 11 days.
Was he a psychotic human by then? Was he in a coma? Was he moving? 11 freaking days.
Because by the time you get to 3 days of no sleep, you can have complex hallucinations, disordered thinking. Actually, that's after 48 hours. Acute psychosis or toxic delirium.
For 11 days, how?
And then there was a British woman in 1977 who won a competition to continuously rock in a rocking chair, presumably by a landslide. And she did this for 18 days.
How?
I don't know. But because of this, acknowledging the injury people might cause themselves through intentional sleep deprivation, the Guinness Book of Records stopped keeping track of this particular thing last decade. So pretty much, sleep.
That's sleep for you. But all this talk about sleep has made me very sleepy.
I know. And do you know what's really good? I also wondered to myself, can you sleep too much? Because I love sleep. And according to this book, there's no evidence that you can cause any damage by oversleeping. And that's not to say you should sleep for like 18 hours a day, because I'm pretty sure that will be too much and you'll see damage. But the amount of time that people can sleep, between like 9-10 hours maybe, is a bit more than the 8 hours that you should be getting. There's no damage.
Oh,
so
my
sleep
God.
All you want.
Great news. Gonna sleep forever. Wow. Mm-hmm. Sleep is, like, no one talks about how important it is. Even, like, when we decided to do this episode, I was like, it'll just be cool to talk about sleep. But now I'm like, oh my God, it's so important.
Do you know what, though? I feel like it's maybe, like, not the right people are talking about it. Like, I don't think scientists and policymakers are talking about it. But definitely my gran and my mum has been like, do you know what will help that?
That's true. My mum's the same, where she's like, why are you working so late? Go home. Go to sleep.
Yeah. And it's like when you've got an infection, the best thing that your family tell you to do is rest. Yeah, which makes sense because you want you to sleep.
So, Amy, if people zoned out, and to be fair, like, if this put you to sleep.
I'm glad it put you to sleep.
You're like, you know what sounds good? Sleep. I get it. But if you just come back from your nice little power nap or disco nap,
from your
micro sleep, maybe, what is one thing you should take away from this episode?
I have two things.
Go ahead. I'll give you permission for two.
Thank you. The first one is just siesta. And then the second one is, I'd really appreciate if you will stop calling me Lacey for napping all the time, because actually I'm doing the right thing for my body.
Get your 8 hours of sleep as well. Yeah. Like, even if you can't get a nap in, which I know it's hard 9 to 5, but get your 8 hours of sleep, because you could be pre-diabetic, obese, with cardiovascular disease and cancer, and it's all because
reproductive
issues,
inability,
Alzheimer's maybe.
They've done those studies where they make people not sleep, but they still give them the good food and exercise, and it does nothing.
Because your body can't process anything you're putting into it if you're not sleeping. Mm-hmm. So cool. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So, social media?
Yep, so give us a follow on Instagram at This Is A Stupid Question But, on Twitter at TIESQB. And if you have any suggestions, etc., give us an email at thisisastupidquestionbut@gmail.com.
Tune in 2 weeks from now, where we answer the stupid question, although I think it's a very valid question considering it's July right now, but why does it always...
It's August!
Lockdown has meant I've lost complete track of time.
Your circadian rhythm
is like off by at least 3 months right now. So we're going to answer the stupid question, why does it always rain in Scotland? It won't stop raining. it was a suggestion, which is cool. We get to answer other people's questions. But yeah, so tune in then. And we're going to learn about the weather, which will be cool.
Yeah, it's not just going to be about Scotland. We'll tell you what the rain is, why it rains.
But it will also be a lot of moaning about the rain. But yeah, so see you then. Okay.
Okay.
Bye.